You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Thursday, November 30th, 2017. My name is Michael Brooks on a Michael Thursday. And this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, journalist, columnist, editor David Kleon. Why should the left care about the Russia story? Hint. It's the neoliberalism, stupid. Nancy Pelosi now saying that John Conyers should resign, the House's most senior Democrat and member, I believe, and an iconic figure getting hit with truly grotesque charges of harassment. Matt Lauer is out at NBC. The Senate GOP clears a hurdle on a tax plan so regressive, such a fundamental assault on every non-wealthy American, that the New York Times says that this will affect not only the tax rates, but also local and states' ability to design their own policy. All that and more in the tax plan. John McCain voting for the plan right after his New York Magazine piece about how he's at war with Trump. So the dumb magazine coverage continues. Marco Rubio is saying, well, the deficit, he's just getting right to it. The offsets of the massive hole in the budget that we're going to create by tax giveaways, we can just take care of it by hurting people on disability, trimming Social Security, proving once again that this horrific plan would be happening under any Republican. Democrats continuing their threat to have a government shutdown to protect the dreamers. And there is very strong evidence and a highly underreported and extremely important story that U.S. Special Forces massacred civilians in Somalia as part of AFRICOM operations, according to a groundbreaking report in the Daily Beast. Justice Department appears to favor more restraints on government's access to digital information. A major Supreme Court decision on Wednesday agreed with just that. And the ex-union buster turned NLRB board member divulges 100-plus additional former clients of his, including great proponents of organized labor like Amazon, Wells Fargo, and CBS, and 10 Senate Democrats, including Dianne Feinstein, who was the lead writer on the letter, not exactly a paragon of progress, is making some modest criticisms of Israeli human rights abuses. All that and more on today's Majority Report. We're not going to elaborate with regard to what was going on yesterday, but there is a comment on the Majority Report YouTube channel that Sam put out. It went live at 8:30 a.m. this morning. I encourage everybody to watch it. We'll get you up to date with everything you need to know about that situation. Let's start with some sound, and I believe we're starting with the Trump. What was it?
Alex Jones.
Oh, Alex Jones. Okay, so Alex Jones, as we know, is a member of the Trump America mainstream media. And it has been noted by many people that Trump, many people, grabs random pieces of information that fit his demented worldview from whoever those people may be, whether they be Alex Jones or somebody that he's just like eating an overcooked steak with at dinner. And Alex Jones is now going to publicly address this rumor that he gives Trump information, and not only confirm that he gives Trump information, but also how this information travels through his fellow malignant narcissist Donald Trump's brain.
I think it's absolutely right to question Trump and to not believe what he says. Like Ronald Reagan said, trust but verify. That's what keeps the politicians honest. Not just Trump, but the people around him. A lot of times he's not aware of somebody going sideways on him until he gets told about it. I have personally witnessed it at least 5 or 6 times where I've directly told the president about something. He says, I've written it down. I'm going to look into it. Are you sure that's right, Alex? And I'm like, yes, sir. And then days later, word for word, he researches it, he comes out, and he addresses it. They call that easily influenced, or he believes the last thing he heard. No. When he gets told about a Harvard study showing millions of illegals voted, he goes and looks into it and finds out it's true. I mean, that's what Trump does.
I ask other crazy people if the thing that the other crazy person says that validates my paranoia, delusions, and racism is true. And then they all say that it's true, and then I say it's true, and then we repeat it. What part of the process are you not understanding?
I was on secretharvardstudies.com.
Yeah, where is this secret? We were discussing this. Because apparently, according to all of these lunatics, there is always like Harvard studies or Yale studies or, you know, like anytime you get like a pop-up ad, like if you go to some crazy right-wing website, there's always like some like, you know, when they're not saying that like, you know, Harvard and Yale and everything are part of the globalist conspiracy, there's like a secret team of top-notch scientists at like Harvard Medical School that have, you know, validated that secret space alien technology, which you can order on an online catalog, will make you live to 250 and have an insatiable sexual appetite. And I just really want to know, genuinely from the bottom of my heart, to Alex Jones, where can I get a link to this secret Harvard department that releases all these amazing studies?
You can ask Ted Cruz and Tom Cotton.
Yeah, exactly. Where are Ted Cruz and Tom Cotton familiar with the Kennedy School research that showed that there are 30 million Guatemalans that voted illegally but somehow couldn't give Hillary just a win? Like, no, it's about a moral victory. That's how we vote, man. You can't distort the Electoral College. I mean, we are pawns of the globalists, but within limits. I really, really want access to this secret Ivy League department that produces all of these incredible studies, which fuels the right-wing worldview. It's a special request. I would like to do some research on it. Folks, the holiday season is fast approaching. Now, we have all had incredible time eating the Omaha Steaks packages that we've sent, that we've had here. We've had everything from, well, I've had the burgers. I've had some of the tartlets. Did you have any of the steak?
I had, I think, the filet mignon, and I've had the burgers before. The problem with expanding as a company is that this stuff gets spread thinner and thinner through the office. So
that's right. We need to hire more vegans. It's just unbelievably delicious, and it's every time we get a package, they're immediately snatched up in the office. And Sam is definitely not a Swedish-style socialist about this. Total top-end capitalist. He gobbles up all of the prime choices immediately. And then we have to fight for it for the rest of it at the bottom of the pyramid. But it is just delicious. And now, let me tell you about how Omaha Steaks, for only $49.99, you and your family, you can get your family a gift pack when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter my code report in the search bar. That's 75% off. And I can do that for my family. Matt can do that for his. Brendan can do that for his. It's an incredible deal. Right now, Omaha Steaks is giving exclusive savings just to my listeners. Listen to everything and you will get for less than $50. Filet mignon. Top sirloins, boneless pork strips, boneless chicken breasts, kielbasa sausages, burgers, potatoes au gratin, caramel apple tartlets, Omaha steak seasoning packet, plus get 4 additional kielbasas for free. Go to omahasteaks.com and enter my code REPORT in the search bar and get 75% savings. It's a gift that's guaranteed to be a hit. Incredible. I think I'm actually going to be doing that. Maybe for my pops. And one other sponsor we got to tell you about. Supports for today's show comes from Health IQ. Health IQ believes the best way to improve health in the world is to celebrate health consciousness through social and financial rewards. So they use science and data to secure lower rates on health insurance for health-conscious people, including runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, and more. 56% of Health IQ customers save between 4% and 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ. Like saving money by being a good driver, Health IQ gets you lower rates on life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. After all, physically active people have a 34% lower risk of all-cause mortality, 56% lower risk of heart disease, and 22% decrease in cancer mortality compared to people who remain inactive. See if you qualify to get your free quote today at healthiq.com/majority or mention the promo code majority when you talk to a Health IQ agent. That's healthiq.com/majority to get your free quote. Go to healthiq.com to support the show and see if you qualify. Okay, everybody, we are going to take a brief break and we will be right back with David Kleon to talk about why the left should care about Russia. Welcome back to the Majority Report. I'm Michael Brooks. Joining us now is David Kleon. He is a journalist and editor based in Brooklyn, New York. He's written extensively on Russia and international affairs. David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, David, you wrote a very interesting piece, an op-ed column in the New York Times on November 14th called Why Don't Sanders Supporters Care About the Russia Investigation? And I just want to set the conversation a little bit, and you can see this even inside our audience. The conversation gets very polarized. I am definitely a bit more sympathetic to the Russia as a very sort of, in some respects, partially because, look, let's table a couple things. There's a lot of conspiracy theories and sort of alt-center hysteria about Russia. But at the same time, there's been this sort of smaller contingent, but a certain group of people on the left have wanted to sort of entirely ignore the story, even though there's something to it. We don't know the scale of it, but there's something to it. Can you kind of set up the parameters of your view of the Russia investigation and then why people in the actual left should care about it?
Sure. And I think that's a very fair way to introduce the topic. And actually, just before I get into that, I want to say for your audience that, as is virtually always the case with op-eds anywhere, I did not write and actually was not consulted on the title of the piece,
right.
Why Don't Sanders Supporters Care About the Russia Investigation?
Right.
As a Sanders supporter myself, the single most frequent complaint I've gotten about the piece is, I'm a Sanders supporter and I do care,
right.
Which I think a lot do. So it was an intentionally provocative headline, and I say that with all due respect to the excellent editors I worked with, But it of course simplifies what I was trying to say, and I probably would have said the left and not specifically Sanders supporters. But mm-hmm. with that said, my view of how we should look at the Russia story, I think that there's an abundance of evidence, even if a lot of it is more smoke than fire, that there was a coordinated effort by the Russian government to interfere in the 2016 election. I think that you can point to several distinct areas where new information is coming out all the time. And I want to speak very carefully because, as you rightly noted, there are conspiracy theorists. I will name some. There is Louise Mensch. There is Eric Garland. Seth Abramson, I think. Some of them are worse than others, but there are definitely people, especially on Twitter, and some of them have gotten platforms on MSNBC and elsewhere, even in the New York Times, who are wildly speculating, faking Russia expertise, spreading misinformation, and I just want to make clear that I disown all of that, and that I think I was actually slow to recognize that that was a real problem, because a year or so ago, you know, at the time of the election, before and after, I was much more concerned with the world historical event that was actually happening than with the fact that it had given rise to some grifters. But in retrospect, I understand.
I'm laughing because I think that so much of how the conversation gets distorted we may agree or disagree on specifics of Russia, but I think that that is you identified such a fundamental problem in a lot of the discourse right now, that people are, yes, of course, people like Mensch and Garland are a profound problem and distorting and all the rest. But the notion that when you have, you know, this administration in place, and I would say any administration in place, and even just the broader structural realities of Washington dysfunction and corruption, and your primary concern is that some, you know, Twitter troll is going to leverage a global cold war more so than literally what's happening every day from the higher reaches of power that's right in front of your face, that should be your signal that you have a fundamental misalignment with reality. So I appreciate that.
Absolutely. And I want to say that, although I am always hesitant to call myself a Russia expert, I think to call yourself an expert is smug. What is true is that I have been following Russia and the former Soviet Union and its history and its politics since, let's say, 2002 or so, and since college. I'm dating myself, but in a variety of contexts. And I did not discover Russia with the 2016 election, which it often feels like a lot of people on both sides of this did. And the notion that Russia would be inclined to interfere in various ways, while it can seem bizarre and unprecedented, you know, there were, and I certainly didn't predict it in advance. There were reasons to think, based on things that they had done in neighboring countries, based on the general state of U.S.-Russia relations. In fact, a rejected pitch that I did in maybe, 2014 or so, for a magazine I won't name, was when it seemed clear that Hillary Clinton was the likely front runner and likely next president, but she hadn't formally declared yet, so I was early on this, I had concerns about her relationship with Putin, their antagonistic relationship, and the roots of that, which I knew a lot about. And I thought it might be a problem.
Right.
And they were like, oh, this is too early, too speculative. And I don't really blame them for that as an editorial decision. But in hindsight, it would have been a very prophetic piece, I think.
Absolutely.
So anyway, I think this interference campaign was real. I had a little...
Can you explain that? Get into the specifics of what you think is... Because I think there's another thing that's very important to really get to the actual serious specifics of what is real, being the operative word.
So, absolutely. So I had a little thread a few months ago where I identified what I think are four distinct, rich areas of Russian involvement that we are learning more about all the time, faster than I can keep up with, and at the same time too slowly to really nail down. So the first broad category would be, and I think by far the most important, would be direct ties between the Russian government or agents of the Russian government and people in the Trump administration or campaign or possibly Trump himself. And obviously this takes many dimensions, from potential building deals in Moscow or money laundered through Trump properties in New York, to the Manafort's involvement, the Flynn involvement, you know, whatever conversations Jared Kushner may have had with this Nitskaya, and plenty more. I mean, but I would sort of group that all together as one big thing, direct contacts. And obviously, if something can really be substantiated about foreknowledge of any of the other things I'm going to say, that's where you get into collusion. That's where you get into, you know, conspiracy and things that might affect the Trump presidency. A second category would be this broad social media campaign. Here, I've been annoyed at how some people I know and respect on the left react to it, where every time we get some new story, some scooplet from the Daily Beast that's like, you know, here are some more Facebook ads we found, and people are always like, oh, that was only seen by, you know, a few thousand people, or how is that important, or more money was spent, you know, by this campaign on this. Mm-hmm. And then more stories keep coming out, and they come out on every platform, and then, you know, Facebook goes from saying this is ridiculous to saying this happened a handful of times to saying it happened on a massive scale. I mean, my working assumption that has never been proved wrong since these stories first started coming out in late summer 2016 is that there is always more than you initially know. Mm-hmm. And I think a kind of lazy habit among skeptics has been to treat each story like it exists in a complete vacuum, like we don't know anything else, like there's not any kind of pattern being established here. And I don't think you have to be conspiratorial to understand that none of these stories exist in isolation. So, mm-hmm. So the first was collusion or potential collusion. The second is the social media campaign. The third would be evidence that there was probing of voter databases. In the scariest scenario, which I think people are very hesitant to allege, and so am I, this might involve actually affecting vote counts in some way in some states. I don't know that there's any hard evidence that ever happened, so I wouldn't want to intimate that there is, but it's obviously worth considering, and the probing is disturbing in and of itself.
Right.
And the fourth would be, the fourth is actually the most clear cut, I think, even though people are constantly casting doubt on the connection, the hacks of the DNC and of Podesta laundered through WikiLeaks into the media to cause chaos on the Democratic side. And of course, nothing corresponding was done on the Republican side, even though it could have been, as well as subsequent evidence that's emerged that Julian Assange, you know, clearly was openly trying to collude with Trump campaign to stop the Clinton campaign. I think that's pretty clear.
Through chatting with Trump Jr. on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. So I think you add all these things together, and yeah, I mean, I can't, you know, paint it. I would win a Pulitzer right now if I could, and I'm not an investigative reporter by any means, if I could explain precisely how this all fits together, and if I could prove that, you know, Donald Trump or his closest advisors directly plotted to steal information and tamper with voting rolls and stuff. But, you know, we will find out. And I have learned over the last year or so, just trust reputable, real reporters at, you know, at real newspapers and organizations, ignore the conspiracy theorists, and, you know, trust, hopefully, that the Mueller investigation will, you know, produce results in due course. But I think it is absurd and in its own way conspiratorial to pretend that these things don't point toward a large coordinated effort by the Russian government to influence the election.
So let me, I have some areas of agreement, disagreement, and then I think, but before we get to, I think in some ways those are actually almost sort of secondary, because I think that broadly speaking, it's always struck me that there's essentially, there's some position that acknowledges reported realities and certain connections, and then you can go from either thinking that it points to something kind of scattershot and limited but still real, or something more systemic and so on. But I think that anywhere in that kind of middle category, anywhere that isn't either on one hand that this is, you know, Putin, Manchurian candidate, and the vote, you know, the kind of full Garland Mensch sort of world, and then on the other hand, the complete denial of reality world that you see some people on the left, right? That there in the, in there is this is an area, unlike many others, where I do think that there is some kind of like broad sort of middle, I guess, that makes some sort of sense. Though I wish I could think of a better word. Not sure what that was there. But before we get to that, I mean, I think the other very relevant point of this piece, though, is how you frame how we understand this. Because this is another area that I think actually takes place even independently of the specific evidence or not evidence about what happened. There's people like me who would say, I think that there's totally real evidence there. I'm not sure if I'm as convinced as you are as how sort of systemic and integrated it was. But as I say, there's no doubt that there's something there. But then I might say I'm concerned that some people use Russia as a sort of conspiratorial rubric to sort of dismiss and get away from any other conversations, including, by the way, the fact that things like influence peddling on social media is going to be leveraged by everybody, including, you know, domestic influence peddlers, which I think are ultimately kind of in an American domestic context much more dangerous than Russian foreign policy to a clean election process. I'm more concerned about what the Facebook ads that the Koch brother, you know, outlets are going to sort of end up cooking up. But being that as it may, I think what was very important about your piece is that instead of kind of drawing to this one-dimensional Russia conversation, you drew a through line that connects the influence peddling of Russia to a broader set of revelations about everything from the Panama leaks, the Paradise Papers, these kind of global parasitic relationships of money and influence peddling that is sort of exemplified in our neoliberal time. And you filter the Russia investigation through that angle. So maybe if you could sort of elaborate on that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very funny, actually. In my pitch, I promised not to use the word neoliberal in the piece. And in the end, I didn't. But I certainly had it in mind.
neoliberal. Sometimes overused words are true.
I think it's a very good word with a real meaning. But yeah. but many disagree. So
they're neoliberals haven't read.
Yes, especially neoliberals. Right. But I was trying to move the conversation forward in a way. Yes, because I have been frustrated over the last year by how much time and energy I've spent just arguing with people over whether the Russia story is a thing at all, whether there's anything to it. And I think people at this point, it is becoming pretty ludicrous to pretend that there's not something there, as you say. Right. And we can debate about its size or importance or whether it was decisive. And in many ways, that's an empirical debate. More information will come out. We'll know. But it's getting to the point where it's completely absurd to pretend that it's just all made up by the DNC or whatever, or the deep state. But
there's a word that should be retired. Yeah, that one should be that term. Well, it's a great word, but I mean, when Sean Hannity's talking about it, then you really know. But anyways, please go ahead.
Well, yes, it comes in for a lot of abuse for sure. But I wanted to move the conversation forward, sort of on the assumption, and it was really the Manafort indictment where I thought this is the moment, because I could start to see people in my feed who I've thought of as smart skeptics who, you know, don't totally dismiss the thing, but would really rather talk about anything else. I started to see them kind of coming to terms with like, wow, this is a pretty big deal, this Manafort guy. And there's just a lot of meat here. And I started to think, and then actually sort of after I pitched it and before I drafted it, the Paradise Papers came out and I was like, okay, this is perfect. This is what I need to really make this piece work. That I think if the left can wrap its head around the idea that there is something here and can accept that, and that the story has to be engaged with in some way, that it can't just be ignored or dismissed, it's not a story that flatters the sensibilities of neoliberals, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, as much as you might think. Mm-hmm. As I say in the piece, I think for a lot of, and as you said, I think for a lot of Democrats and people who, unlike me, were enthusiastic about Hillary Clinton's campaign, you know, the whole thing does seem like a very convenient excuse for why she lost. and a way to, you know, not take any responsibility for any of her failings as a candidate or the campaign's failings. And I think for, you know, never Trumpers, who I often joke are a population of a few dozen people top
at most,
but
yes.
For at most, yeah, but you know, for the prominent conservative pundits and figures who were all in on George W. Bush and McCain and Romney and have been vocal critics of Trump and gotten, I think, a completely undeserved rehabilitation among liberals.
Right. Of course. For
those, you know, for them, they'll say, well, we were right about Russia all along. And Romney said it was our number one geopolitical enemy in 2012. And we need to get tough on them. And what I think both of those camps really miss, I mean, in their self-serving rhetoric is, I agree with the Glenn Greenwalds of the world that we don't need a new Cold War,
right.
That it's a terrible idea, that we don't need to arm Ukraine, which is a take I've written at least twice, that we don't need to escalate in Syria, another take I've written before any of this. But that, you know, there is a left read on Russia if you take it seriously. And it's not by any means limited to Russia, which is that global neoliberalism, which is, you know, a reigning ideology for which the U.S. government is more responsible for promoting than anyone else over the last 25 years or however long it's been, has created these kind of unaccountable transnational flows of capital that is, you know, looted legally or illegally from the public and stored in offshore accounts and in complex financial institutions, and that this is a global problem, and that it requires a kind of left internationalist solution. One thing that I did in the piece that I think works well is I kind of pulled out, and I hope everyone will forgive this Woody Allen reference. I'm not, I know he's a terrible figure for many reasons, but I did a sort of Marshall McLuhan and
right.
Annie Hall type thing here at the end, where having made all the arguments I wanted to make, I pull out Bernie Sanders himself, who I think already agrees with me on all of this.
Yeah.
And because Bernie gave a very good foreign policy speech a few months ago, which included sections on Russia, in which he said, and I'll just give the quote I wrote in the piece here, "Inequality, corruption, oligarchy, and authoritarianism are inseparable. Around the world, we have witnessed the rise of demagogues who, once in power, use their positions to loot the state of its resources. These kleptocrats, like Putin in Russia, use divisiveness and abuse as a tool for enriching themselves and those loyal to them." So, to my mind, this is the way we need to start thinking of this. Russia is not our idealized conception of what the Soviet Union should have been. It's not a left state at all.
Right. Of course.
It's also not, you know, an enemy of all that is good and noble about the American Republic. I entirely reject the framing of we were fine and then the nefarious Russians came and messed us up. It is a corrupt oligarchy that the U.S. had a significant hand in building in the 1990s and has, you know, despite all the belligerent rhetoric, had functional relations with in a lot of ways ever since, mostly because of the needs of the energy sector. And we've allowed Russia's kleptocratic elite to store wealth in this country. And we've, of course, done this with many other countries, too, powerful ones and otherwise. And it's these relationships and, you know, which you can see right in the Trump administration with Tillerson and with what's his name?
Wilbur Ross.
They have him in the piece.
Wilbur Ross.
Congress. Wilbur Ross. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, you can see those relationships right in the administration, among many other places. So this is where I think the left has something productive to say. And it relates back to what you said earlier about how the Kochs or anyone else can abuse social media platforms or just unaccountable money in politics. I mean, I think we need a sort of unified framework where we understand that large corporations, wealthy domestic oligarchs, and powerful foreign intelligence states that are basically, you know, corrupt oil companies themselves,
right.
All sort of have this unprecedented ability to manipulate our political process, and that we should see all of those things as of a piece.
Yeah, so I'm certainly not a Russia expert myself, but I have, you know, if you're just in this business at all, you have to deal with Russia, and I've in various ways. And what I've noticed in the line I say is that Russia makes everybody stupid, because it brings out sort of, you know, I mean, in some ways, a certain type of right-wing kind of clown fascist sort of authoritarian populist politics of a Donald Trump or Pat Buchanan or really the broader modern Republican Party. To be fair to them, even before we got into all this collusion, they should like the modern Russian state. It's a Petro state that exploits religious anxieties and extreme social conservatism to prop up upward financial redistribution
and racism
and anti-Semitism to basically loot the public sector and fund you know, a military industrial complex, and it thrives essentially. The base of the economy is a Petro state, which fuels incredible levels of income inequality, degraded living standards, and then hyper wealth. And then there's a social policy which leverages racism, xenophobia, and religion. The Republican Party should love Russia. You know, Vladimir Putin would be a tremendous GOP candidate. But then, you know, you have the neoconservative desire to have a resurgent Cold War and the never-ending hunt for enemies and the never-ending hostility towards diplomacy and smart international frameworks. Then we have our kind of dum-dum center who doesn't want to take accountability for anything. They don't want any broader conversation about capitalism, about campaign strategy, nothing. It's just Russia, 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 Russia. And then we have a small kind of, you know, tanky left where, you know, and I love Oliver Stone in some ways, but I mean, just the sort of comedy of watching Oliver Stone, who seems like, I mean, I guess the polite way would say he seems really jet lagged or maybe influenced by other things, walking around with, you know, Vladimir Putin, who is just like a, you know, essentially just a gangster, walking around with him being like, yeah, man, I mean, so you're pretty concerned about arms control, right, bro? And this notion
Or Jill Stein,
this notion that Russia's like a paragon advocate of international law and stability, when in reality, and again, this is a both and. We should not escalate in Syria. We have supported terrorist groups in Syria. And Assad commits obscene war crimes, and Russia is playing an imperial human rights violating role there as well. These are all simultaneously true. And for some reason, every single grid on the political map seems to graft their delusions onto Russia as a place. So it becomes an imagined territory than just an actual thing.
Which is actually not new. It's been true since probably at least the late 19th century and throughout the 20th. In fact, my friend Hannah Gase,
she's great.
She wrote a good piece about that some months ago, about the kind of mystical qualities that are ascribed to Russia. But I will say one nuance to that is that Russians themselves, I think, have often played into that themselves. Mm-hmm. The government has, and intellectuals of all stripes in Russia, you know, have always. I mean, it's not simply the West orientalizing Russia. There are old and complicated discourses in Russia about what Russia represents in the context of the West and the world. You know, for all that that Western media outlets and politicians like to paint Putin as a Bond villain, Putin likes to paint himself as a Bond villain,
right.
And he enjoys that dynamic. And it's not entirely imposed on them. But anyway, that's aside.
So, I mean, as a final question, I mean, moving forward, you do, and the Bernie quote does sort of summarize it and sync up your argument. I think you've provided a good map. Which again, I think if you just accept some bare minimum reality that there's something here in this story. And as I say, you might think it's much more, it's deeper than I do, but there's something there. I think anybody who denies that is just not being real with the evidence at this point. And then that the opportunity for the left, and in the Sanders speech, is to connect it to a global story of basically wealth hoarding, oligarchy, and campaign influence. And then this can kind of go on a continuum of even, you know, if you research Washington lobbying efforts as an example, I mean, everything from Saudi Arabia, Israel, to even like a place like Equatorial Guinea, which is a, you know, smaller on the geopolitical map, but does have oil and does have one of the worst human rights records in the world, has a lot of money parked in the United States. It contributes to inequality in main cities like New York and LA, and it has influence across the policy making process. And that, including, by the way, the legal stuff, just dumping money into think tanks and universities, is a major problem for our democracy, and anybody on the left should be concerned about it.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, I actually think that Greenwald and some people in his orbit have made this point in an interesting way, that, you know, when they are acknowledging that Russia, you know, did interfere in some way, they'll bring up countries like Saudi Arabia and Israel, which are, you know, ostensibly U.S. allies, and the massive influence that they wield in Washington, the grotesque influence that they wield in Washington, and with sort of a, they sort of frame it, I'll probably get flack for saying this, but in a kind of whataboutist way, like, mm-hmm. you know, well, sure, Russia does this, but they do that. Whereas I would rather frame it in the constructive way of, yes, both of these things are problems, and exactly. we need to speak up about both of them. And it doesn't, it is true that Russia is kind of, or, you know, Iran for that matter, are kind of cast as geopolitical nemeses in Washington, whereas Saudi Arabia or Israel are cast as friends. Who knows which category Turkey falls into these days? That's a big open question.
Depends on the day, on the hour.
Depends on
the
day.
Size of the Flynn contract.
And you're right. You're right. It can be countries like Equatorial Guinea too. But that there is just rampant corruption in Washington. And I mean, Flynn is actually such an interesting case where I think, in the, you know, the media actually bears some responsibility here. The thing is so built up as a Russia story, and right. and I think that is the biggest story, and Flynn is just a part of it. But really, the craziest thing with Flynn is this Turkey story,
right?
Or it's at least as crazy that he and his son were getting paid maybe like $15 million potentially to kidnap Gulen and send him to Turkey. I mean, that's insane, and it should focus attention not so much on the nefarious Russians as, wow, like a lot of Washington is just for sale to various, you know, foreign governments and oligarchs' agendas, and Russia is just one big example of that.
Or Paul Manafort, for that matter. I mean, the question would be like...
Right, he worked for many governments, he worked not for just for the Putin-aligned Ukrainian
every,
government,
I mean,
but for many.
Yes, Africa, Latin America, Eastern Europe. I mean, this guy worked right. going back to the 1980s for almost every obscene government on the planet. And so the question, if we're doing it in this broader constructive sense, is like, why wasn't he already under criminal investigation going back to the 80s? And, you know, and why, by the way, is many of these things that he and others do with administration supports, because as an example, all the dictators he backed in the 80s were closely aligned with Reagan's foreign policy, you know, supported by administrations and, in fact, deeply unethical, grotesque behavior, which is totally legal. These are the bigger structural problems.
I didn't think I'd be bringing him up in this conversation, but like, how is Lanny Davis legal? You know, with all the like horrible regimes that he's repped. Like, these are
exactly.
This, I grew up in Washington and spent a lot of time there, and I've, you know, gotten glimpses of this culture over the years. I mean, I don't want to oversell that, but like, it is insane how much money from foreign governments and foreign interests, and of course, crooked domestic interests. That goes without saying, I would hope.
Right.
You know, is just flowing through K Street, and how corrupted the process is. And you hear about, you know, with Russia, you hear about like the Republican representative Rohrabacher, who Paul Ryan pretty much openly knew was on Putin's payroll. I mean, there is a swamp that needs to be drained. Obviously, the Trump administration has, you know, embodies the worst of it. But I think that, you know, one thing I say toward the end of the piece is I think Ryan was joking,
but it was a very suggestive joke.
I'm not totally convinced he was, but one point I make toward the end of the piece is that, in kind of a so what, is I think that the left, or something like the left, has it more of a stake in the political process than is apparent to itself or to a lot of its critics in both parties, or could very soon have that stake. I think it's entirely plausible that not just that a Democrat could become president in 2020 or in 2024, but that the Democrat who does, you know, whether that's Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or anybody else, will be relying on the support of millennial left-leaning people who were broadly for Bernie Sanders and who do want shifts on economic issues, but also on foreign policy. Yep. I despair of the fact that there really are not coherent left foreign policy institutions or publications. It's something I'm always saying with people I'd like to work on, I'd like to encourage. I can name individual people like Matt Duss, who I know advises Bernie Sanders, right, who you know, do contribute to that very badly needed discourse. But like, really, we could be in a position soon, like in a few years, where we have a sympathetic White House and we don't want Hillary Clinton's foreign policy. Right. It's not enough to just sort of shrug off Russia as not important either. We really do need a new approach that's rooted in our actual values. And that's what I was sort of hoping to point to with this piece. Like, how can we reshape the actual foreign policy process of the United States, even if it's just aspirational at this point, around confronting inequality and oligarchy and neoliberalism?
Well, from your lips to Allah's ears, David Kleon, I really appreciate your inshallah. I really appreciate your time. The piece, which he did not name, is Why Don't Sanders Supporters Care About the Russia Investigation? But also we'll have a link to your Twitter where you can follow all of David's works. It's very, very valuable. David, really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Bye. Okay, everybody, we are going to go to the fun half. Become a member of the Majority Report today. Definitely need your support more than ever. majority.fm/become a member/member. Also, justcoffee.coop. There is the 30% off deal for the holidays on the MR blend. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, like the YouTube page. Check out my show, Michael Brooks Show. We're moving, we're growing. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Watch the full show, Michael Brooks Show, on YouTube. Become a patron. We are climbing towards that initial 1K goal, and you get to watch Matt and I stream Wolfenstein, and we also begin work with an animator on some of those impressions. So check that out, patreon.com/TMBS. 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. The IMs are on. We'll see you in the fun half.
C'est une poupée qui fait noir. C'est une poupée qui fait noir. Toute la journée.